Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the UConn Pod. I'm Brenner Pizak, and I'm joined by Aman Kidwai of the UConn blog, Ryan Smith of Voodoo 5 and a USF writer, and Rondale Williams, who will be a regular football contributor for the pod. We want to get the show started today with the 38-21 defeat the Huskies took this weekend at the hands of the Boise State Broncos. Now, Aman, despite the final score, there were certainly some bright spots for the Huskies. What were your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, I think, you know, overall we have to feel pretty positive about the game and its outcome. After Stony Brook, he definitely had some concerns about the team and only being able to barely beat an FCS opponent. But, you know, we held our own against that Boise State team. We had a chance to win the game in the fourth quarter. Given some of the mistakes that we made and some of the weaknesses on the roster, I'd say, you know, definitely have to be very pleased overall with the way that the team played. And I would say particularly Chandler Whitmer, our quarterback, who probably had his best game in a UConn uniform, being able to find players. I thought he was much smarter in the pocket than he's ever been. And our defense looks really stout, which I'm pleased with. I know, you know, UConn's made its name as being a defensive minded football team, but I had some skepticism about whether the defense would be up to the level of previous years. And looks like we'll be just fine defensively.
Yeah, and you know, definitely tag off that. I would say the same thing. Before the season started, I didn't think the defense would actually play too well either, especially, you know, the back four, you know, your two DBs and the safeties. But it seems like the front seven has been, you know, blitzing, getting a lot of pressure on quarterback. They haven't always got there. But I feel like, you know, the more, you know, as we get more athletic along the defensive line, I feel like that definitely will happen. You know, as you kind of, and as I kind of stated with you, you know, talked about with you guys before the podcast began, you know, I feel that our third and fourth corners are, you know, going to be our weaknesses. As you saw in the Boise State game, those corners were the corners that made mistakes, and they were the one that let, you know, those mistakes led the touchdowns. But on the offensive side of the ball, I feel like our biggest weakness there is the offensive line. Our running game hasn't been intact. Of course, Arkell Newsome is kind of doing his thing, but he's not a great pass blocker, primarily because of his size, so you can't have him in there for 24, 25 snaps a game. But, you know, they need to pick up stunts better, become more athletic. That'll come in time with recruiting and whatnot. And then, I definitely agree with you 100%. Chandler Whitmer made a lot of smart decisions. I know fans don't like to see sacks, but a lot of times a sack is better than an interception or, you know, pick six. So I definitely have to agree with you on that point. I do think he does need to get better at, you know, recognizing a lot of the coverages out there and a lot of zone reads and stuff like that. What I noticed, he stared down a lot of receivers still, which has been a problem of the past. Yeah. So if you look at some of the plays like Deshaun Fox, you know, I think he was trying to be smart and look off the safeties. So he looked at Deshaun Fox, but he never got his eyes back around Jeremy Davis. And to me, that's what kind of led to some later mistakes. And, you know, there are plays where Jeremy Davis was open on drag routes and everything like that. He didn't see Jeremy Davis. And I think he was trying to be a lot smarter, but at the same time, he was missing some wide open receivers.
And do you think that could be, excuse me, Rondell, do you think that could be a little bit of a game plan thing as well, trying to get Jeremy Davis the ball a little bit more as a focal point of the offense?
Yeah, because if you look at that game against Stony Brook, you know, they targeted him multiple times. I don't remember one pass even going, you know, the Deshaun Fox's way. Kamal Abrams had a couple passes his way in that game. But, you know, so I do think Bob Diaco definitely wants to get the ball to him and Mike Cummings. You know, he definitely wants to see him get the ball. You know, and I think they could throw him some jet sweeps or something like that. I'm also a big Cowboys fan. So one of the things I've seen the Dallas Cowboys do over the years is they run a lot of jet sweeps to Dez Bryant, or they do those slant patterns, you know, try to get him the ball, you know, in less than 3 seconds. And I think that's what we need to do with Jeremy Davis more. You know, get him running a lot more drag routes, slant routes, things over the middle, because he's big and strong, and he can definitely be even more productive than what he has already been.
And I think that the point you make there is really good, because utilizing him in a jet sweep capacity or something with a quick slant kind of limits the pressure that you're putting on the offensive line. And as you talked about, they were having a hard time standing up, especially to any type of movement, any stunt up front. So if they could get him the ball with a quick two-step drop or like a jet sweep, like you said, it just kind of gets the offensive line moving in one direction and sort of simplifies the whole process.
Yeah, I'd like to throw in something about Jeremy Davis there. I'm going to just openly plagiarize from Andrew Callahan's tail of the tape, but it looked like a lot of the coverage was, you know, geared towards shutting down Jeremy Davis, and so as a result, you know, we were looking for someone else to step up, and, you know, unfortunately, it didn't look like there were many people willing or able to do so. And I think, you know, when we think about how other teams are going to defend us down the road and thinking about our receiving options, you know, true freshman Alec Bloom has looked solid with a limited amount of targets, but, you know, opposing defenses are going to be able to key on Jeremy Davis, and if we don't keep them honest with the run, then we're not going to be able to burn them with the pass. So, you know, I think definitely the offensive line, obviously a huge concern, but we also need a secondary receiver to show up and be a legitimate threat for Jeremy Davis's sake and for the sake of our passing game and the offense as a whole.
Yeah, you know, and with that being said, I mean, Deshaun Fox did have a big week last week. But I would say that the problem with, I think, a lot of the other, with him is just staring down receivers so often. You know, so every single time he snapped the ball, you know, yes, he recognized Jeremy Davis was covered and, you know, they had two men on his side the entire game. But at the same time, he stared down Deshaun Fox. Of course, that led to over 100 yards receiving for Deshaun Fox in the last game. But I felt like Sean McQuillan or Alec Bloom could have got even more catches. And that's what I mean. You know, over the middle, I saw a lot of receivers open. The tight ends were definitely open on little hitch routes and everything like that. You know, that may come with time, but I think we've been waiting for about, you know, 2 years for Chen Whitman to kind of come around.
So. Exactly. So, Amon, do you have any further statements or any thoughts on the Boise State game? Even though the score did look like a blowout, it certainly wasn't that. I mean, very tight even into the third quarter.
Yeah, I would say, you know, if you told me we had a chance to win the game with the ball in the fourth quarter, you know, I would have said you're insane. So that in and of itself, you know, I definitely am not a major proponent of the moral victory. But I think with this team and the situation that we're in, and given the team that we faced, we have to overall, take it as a positive and realize that we're moving in the right direction. So
I actually have one question about that. You know, Bob Diaco keeps talking about when the preparation falls, phrase, quote unquote. Do you guys actually believe, you know, that he's not maybe exposing a whole entire playbook right now? Or because he's the new coach, he's trying to maybe only run about 5 to 10 plays a game on the offensive or defensive side of the ball. You know, what do you think is happening with that? Because I think maybe against an opponent like Stony Brook, maybe he didn't want to show Boise State too much, and so maybe that's why, you know, the score is only 19-16. What do you guys think about that?
I would agree with you 100%. I have to imagine our offense has been as vanilla as they can for now, and
certainly looks that way.
You're right, and you know, it makes sense. And the preparation phase is over, so hopefully we have some good things to look forward to.
With Bob Diaco being brought up there, the last point on that game I wanted to make is he did bring up saying that it was the negative plays, the big time turnovers, the free points that ended up leading to such a lopsided score and basically them losing the game. But with that being said, what can he change, in your opinion, to actually translate to the field? Because it seems like he stated that that is a main topic in practice, that we can't have the negative play, we can't have the catastrophic play, but it pops up, and it pops up multiple times and really basically eliminates your chance to win the game. So what type of thing do you actually see being able to improve on that in the future games, Amon or Rondell?
So I would say, especially when I played at the college level, the biggest thing to try to stop mistakes were two things: game film and repetition. you know, once you, and I don't think a lot of people understand what the point of game film is. It's not just to recognize what the, you know, other team is doing, but there's a lot of it is recognizing your own mistakes and where you need to be in certain spots. And I think we have a lot of freshmen, especially playing, you know, at the DB level, or playing the DB position right now. And so I think a lot of it is just recognizing where they actually need to be. So it's one thing to look at a playbook and say, okay, yeah, I'm playing a cover two. I need to be about 5 to 7 yards from the receiver, blah, blah, blah. But it's another thing to say, okay, on film, I realize in the cover two, if I see a receiver break, I need to make this step. I need to make that step. So I think those types of things can raise, you know, mistakes. And that's all technique. You know, so when you hear these ESPN analysts talk about, oh, well, he has poor technique, a lot of it is in reference to those types of things, not realizing how you need to play in a certain base coverage. And so I think that'll raise some of the mistakes and experience, just realizing, hey, you know what, I've seen this guy line up like that before, so I know he's going to run this kind of route. And I think those things, you know, will come with time, but I think those types of things will raise, you know, mistakes.
So essentially growing pains.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. So along those lines, we actually had some more news coming out of the UConn football program this week that two players were going to have their careers ended. That was Pruitt on the defensive line and Paul for the offense. He was a backup offensive lineman. Now, with Pruitt, it was said to be a genetic lower body injury. But with Paul, Diaco described the injury as, quote, upper body or whatever. So, Aman, do you have any thoughts on this situation?
My thoughts are that there certainly is more to the story here. Watching him on video, you know, I watched that press conference. For a guy who has seemed completely at ease, in all public appearances, for the first time ever, he seemed a little awkward, a little uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to make any guesses or jump to any conclusions, but I have to imagine that there was something else up there.
To switch gears here, guys, we're going to go ahead and look forward to USF and UConn's next opponent, the very first game in the American slate. So, Ryan, what are your overall thoughts as a USF writer? What are your overall thoughts of this week's matchup?
It looks like, you know, first off, UConn and USF always play very interesting yet dull games. So I think we can probably assume we're in for another, especially because these seem to be two teams that are in similar points of the same rebuilding curve. You know, they had a coach who came in and really left him in a ditch in more than one way. And they have a new coach who's trying to come in and change the culture. And I think, you know, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we've both seen flashes of that. And we've yet to reap the full benefit. So I think it's going to be a very, very interesting game. You know, maybe not for anyone who's not a UConn or USF fan, but certainly for us, in terms of, you know, the winner is going to be off to a nice, you know, boost, 2-2, 1-0 in the American. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
So, Ryan, talk about your season thus far. You know, you had the close win over Western Carolina, followed by pretty convincing losses to Maryland and NC State. So, you know, I know you guys, you said you're in that rebuild, but losing to NC State that badly, you know, followed by what happened in Maryland, losing despite forcing 6 turnovers. What are the thoughts on the Taggart era thus far, and you know, where are the fans right now? How are they feeling?
You know, last week totally threw USF fans for a curve, I think, because I think, you know, everyone was starting to really rally around Taggart as this fan base's last hope, honestly, because, you know, Skip Holtz left things in such a dismal place. And, you know, last year didn't go well. There's no way that it went well. But what Taggart did succeed in was, you know, he really cleaned out all of Skip Holtz's players. I mean, almost all of them. and, you know, started bringing in his own guys and playing them right away. And so, you know, the team is still very, very young. And, you know, I think I mentioned this before, but he, you know, he went out, grabbed a great recruiting class. So he nailed part two of the rebuild. And this year, I think people came out and were expecting to see some sort of immediate progress. And it's kind of up in the air as to whether or not we've seen that so far. People thought that they really made a big step against Maryland when, you know, I mean, you can argue how much of a step it was when Maryland turned the ball over six times and they still didn't win the game. But, you know, they were playing a mid-tier Big Ten team, you know, close, and that is much better than they would have done last year. And so that was an encouraging step for them. You know, I think everyone's pretty excited. And then last week came and just took a dump all over that. I mean, it was very, very rough. I think people came into that game, was at home. NC State didn't look that good. They really expected to win that. And, I mean, just from the start, everything was wrong. You know, the offense played poorly. The defense played horribly. I mean, horribly. And it really ruined a lot of the goodwill that Taggart had built up. And I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of the more reactionary sections of the fan base are now, you know, looking for answers, and they're very desperate to see some progress made in this next game. Another way to look at it, which is more along the way that I see, is that there are going to be bumps in the road. They're still very, very early in the process, and while it really stinks to lose 49-17 to North Carolina State, I mean, that's not fun at all, it's, you know, games like that happen, and I think this game is very important for them in if they come out strong, and if they can win, like I said, then they're on the right path. And if they lose, then I don't know how many more games they're going to win this year.
Right. So you mentioned you guys have seen flashes. What are the bright points of the USF team so far this year?
Well, there's a very good true freshman running back, Marlon Mack, who he had a big coming out party against Western Carolina, which, to be fair, is not that difficult to have a coming out party against. But regardless, he ran for, I think it was 275 yards, four touchdowns, and he's a very, very talented player, very young, and he's had to do a lot of the work that he's done by himself because the offensive line has really, really struggled lately, especially against NC State, were just horrible. But anyway, he's a very, very good-looking young player, and there are a lot of good-looking young players across the board. There are just not enough of them. The quarterback situation remains unsettled. Mike White has shown, again, with the word flashes, you know, he's had some good games, some very poor games, and some games where we weren't able to see what he can really do because the offensive line was giving him no time to work. We saw our first look at Quentin Flowers, another true freshman. He came in at quarterback, and he's kind of the guy that, you know, a lot of the fan base is stacking a lot of their hopes on. And he came in, ran a lot, just ran the ball mostly, but he threw a couple passes, unfortunately, both of which were intercepted. So that kind of doused some cold water on that. But he's a guy to keep an eye on. Marlon Mack, definitely. And like I said, there are a bunch of freshmen and sophomore littered throughout the roster that you think, you know, this guy could be a player, or this guy is a player, but there are not enough of them right now. I mean, their needs, the team is not fully developed yet.
Definitely. And so to switch gears a little bit, you know, I took a look at the Voodoo 5 site. You know, that definitely, you know, follow you guys on the Twitters. One of the big things for UConn fans has been about attendance and how that affects, you know, how that affects the game atmosphere, how that affects the team, how that affects our perception in the public. Noticing that you guys are having similar challenges. So, you know, would you talk a little bit about, you know, the attendance situation for USF?
Yeah, the attendance, sadly, for USF right now, it is probably, if not at a low point, then very, very close. I think the actual attendance for the NC State game was 17,000, like a little bit over. And I mean, that is, you know, USF fans have made it very clear that when the team is good, they will show up, and when the team is bad, they won't show up. And you know, for a young team, that's one of the problems. And unfortunately, not only are they not good right now, but they're playing teams that are also not good. They're not big name teams. I mean, there appears for right now to be no salvation approaching. You know, doesn't seem like we're getting out of the American anytime soon. So, you know, the only way for them to get those guys back up, maybe you guys, but the only way for them to get that attendance back up is to start winning. And, you know, hopefully that starts happening soon, honestly, is all I can say, because, you know, that 17,000 was before the NC State game, so I don't even know how many are going to show up for this week.
Yeah. You know, I know I was reading an article earlier this week about that same issue. And someone, I guess a couple of fans actually want an on-campus stadium built. You know, are there really any true talks about that, USF getting an on-campus stadium instead of playing at Raymond James?
You know, it's always been something that the fan base has wanted, understandably. And it's the reaction from the athletic department has always been, you know, this is something we want to do, but we don't want to do it without the proper funds. I know, you know, UCF rushed into making an on-campus stadium, and they have a thing that, like, holds, you know, 40,000 people and shakes when, you know, people scream. So, you know, they don't want to make something like that, but at the same time, you know, it's definitely something that I think would help fan support. And for the first time, I think, as far as I have been a USF fan, the athletic department actually came out and said, we're going to look at the feasibility of this and see if we can do something. Because I think they realize right now that they are really reaching a low point with fan support and that they need to do things. I mean, they've come out and, you know, put coolers at the games because, you know, people don't want to come at, you know, 12 o'clock in Florida heat and watch a team get blown out. You know, they're trying to do any little thing they can do to help raise attendance. And it's good to have an athletic department that seems to get it. But, again, it's not going to come until they start winning. And the on-campus stadium, I think, is the same way, where for that to happen, they need more support. And for that support to come, they need to start winning. It all ties into that.
It's a real, real chicken and egg situation.
Exactly.
We're in a similar boat as well. Our stadium is about 20, 25 minutes off campus, and we don't like it. We get made fun of it. But it's what we got, and just got a deal. But do heed Ryan's words, UConn fans. It could be worse.
Yeah.
Could have 17,000 at our game. And though I have to say I'll be interested to see the numbers for this game this week.
It could be absolutely brutal. I'm a little worried about that.
It could be an all-time low. I can't imagine many fans down there are excited to see the 1-2 UConn squad rolling.
You know,
especially after the way that USF played last week. I mean, like I said, that 17,000 was off a game where it looked like they might have turned a corner. I mean, I don't know what they're going to think now. We could be for a very, very empty stadium on a primetime TV slot, which is never a good combo.
Well, we'll move on to talking about, you know, keys to the game, getting some predictions. Why don't we just start with you, Ryan? So, keys to the game, and what's your prediction?
Well, there is absolutely nothing that could surprise me in this game. I mean, if you've learned anything from years of watching UConn and USF and watching these teams play this year, I think that literally almost any possible result is on the table. I would, you know, my gut would say that, you know, I have not watched all three of UConn's game. I saw, you know, most of the BYU game, and I saw most of the Boise State game, and I think they've definitely looked a little bit better than USF has so far. You know, USF is at home. There are a lot of different factors there. You look at it on paper, and it looks pretty evenly matched, and I wish I could give a legitimate key to the game, but, you know, a different USF team is showing up each week. So, I mean, I said earlier that, like, having a rebuilding team is like a bad football whack-a-mole. It's like the quarterback's not good. Okay, you take care of the quarterback situation, but oh no, like, your offensive line sucks now. You know, just week to week to week, there's something different. And it's really could go either way. And I think at the end of the day, when making a prediction for the NC State game, I went with my gut, and I picked USF against a team that looked a little bit better, and we know how that turned out, so I think I'll take the opposite approach And I think UConn looks a little bit better going into this game, and I think that if they play how they've been playing, then UConn should win.
Sounds good. Rondell, what do you think?
Yeah, so I think in this game you have two strengths that are going up against each other. You know, as he alluded to earlier, Marlon Mack has been doing a great job running the ball for USF. And our run defense has looked great. So I think whatever team passes better is going to be the victor in this one. And I actually predict that UConn will win 17-9.
17-9, another barn burner.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know all the USF games, you know, versus UConn are pretty close. They're always like a field goal difference.
It'll probably be a 9-9 game until the final minute when UConn returns a touchdown, interception for a touchdown, and then goes for two for kicks.
But yeah, I mean, I've seen some of the quarterback play for USF. It is not that great. So I think Chandler Whitmer, even though we probably could do better, he's a little bit better than what USF has to offer. So I would definitely...
No, I definitely agree with that. Game. I was definitely impressed with how he played against Boise.
Yeah.
With the exception of... Sometimes he came off like a little bit of like one of those fainting goats in the pocket. You know, as soon as pressure came, he just kind of fell over.
Yeah,
he was throwing the ball very well, and he, you know, I think there's more to the USF quarterbacks that we've seen so far, and they have not been all, like really in a situation to succeed. But he has played much better than anyone has played this year for USF at quarterback.
It's funny that you mentioned that about Whitmer because, as I stated earlier, I'm also a Cowboys fan, and I was watching the Cowboys game this past weekend, and for a moment I screamed out, "Chandler Whitmer!" Because I saw Romo take hits that Chandler Whitmer was just ducking down and taking the same type of hits, on Saturday. So, yeah, but, you know, I do think we're a little bit better. Not, you know, tremendously better at the
No, point I agree. Point. I definitely agree.
But I think that will be the difference in this game.
How about you, Iman? What's your prediction?
So I was on the Voodoo 5 podcast yesterday, and I said we might see the first ever 8-4 game in college football history, but... I think for a lot of the reasons that we discussed earlier, I do think UConn can pull this one out. I think the key to the game will be, like you said, Ryan, these are two very young teams. So the key to the game will be who can make the least mistakes. This is UConn's first game on the road. Who knows what can happen there? This is a very young team. We've given up basically a turnover that led to a touchdown very early in every single one of our games. If we can't do that, or if we can avoid that, that would be great, and then try to avoid mistakes down the road as well. So, but I do think UConn is able to pull this one out. I think, you know, Bob Diaco really looked at those first three games like a preseason. He treated them the way an NFL coach would treat a preseason, and he's looking at, you know, our goal is being as competitive as possible in our conference because that's where we are right now. So I'll take UConn to win. I'll go 16-9.
Oh, close.
And for me, I want to see, I think a huge portion of this game is going to come down to, can UConn stop the run? As you mentioned, Ryan, with Marlon Mack, I think that's where it's going to start for UConn. If they can shut him down, force South Florida into obvious passing situations, I think that's where they're going to have the best bet to get pressure and rattle the young quarterback. And I think that's the best way to force turnovers, like you were saying, Iman. And I think that really starts, though, with shutting down the run. Because regardless of if you think you can get pressure on passing downs, if they do go in there and let Marlon Mack run all over them and carve them up, suddenly... You're never in those advantageous spots, and they're always at second and short, and third and convertible. So, I would say for me, it's going to be can UConn stop the running game early, and I think showing how they were able to slow down the Broncos when they were averaging 567, I believe, yards it was a game. UConn able to hold them underneath 300 was extremely impressive. I think that South Florida, if they're not able to run the ball, is going to have a hard time moving it. And I could see a 17-6 UConn victory.
All right, so we'd like to end the UConn pod with our final thoughts. Mine is I'm looking for a win this weekend. That's it, plain and simple. We've seen some growth. We've experienced some growing pains. I want to see the win today. Anything else, however it happens, I don't care. Please win this weekend, UConn. Please win.
How about you, Rondale?
Yeah, you know, my biggest thing, I really want to see the running game get on track. You know, especially Josh Mariner, you know, he looked, from what I heard, he looked impressive in practice before the season started. So I really want to see that, you know, because that's been our, you know, that's been our go-to, you know, in the past couple of years has been the ground game with Donald Brown and Andre Dixon and those running back of the past. So I really want to, you know, I want to see that come, you know, I want to see that come back, and if it does, then maybe Jeremy Davis could also have a big game. He's not, you know, you can't always stack two players on top of him and cover twos. So that's what I like to see, the run game come back.
Ryan, how about you? What's your final thought?
No matter what happens on Friday, I would just like the to exorcise the demon of whatever has been haunting past USF and UConn games. So if we do that, I don't care who wins.
Just something watchable.
Yes, I would love that.
Very good.
Very not watchable.
As it has been many times in the past. All right, for me, guys, my final thought is, I just want to see UConn avoid the catastrophe play. Just see what the results would be with a regular game played out, where you don't lose the turnover battle by 3+, where you don't give up an 80-yard return of some form, whether it be punt, return, fumble return, interception. Just avoid the catastrophic play, and let's see where the teams stack up. And I think UConn, based on their defensive line play, will have a pretty good shot to win the game.
Agreed.
So that's going to do it for the UConn pod this week, guys. Thank you very much to Aman, Ryan, and Rondale. And we'll catch you next time on the UConn pod.